All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly broadcasting live from the Internet Law Center here in the heart of Silicon Beach in Santa Monica. Please be seated. We have a great show for you today. Very topical. We're going to be talking about who is running phony cell phone towers around the United States. And so if you thought people were listening to you, maybe they are. And we're going to be talking with Andrew Rosenblum about that. And it's a fascinating story. And but first, a couple of announcements. I'm sure you probably already were aware of this, but today is International Men's Day, which is celebrated in a number of countries, including the United States. It's actually part of a UNESCO event. And coincidentally or not, it is also World Toilet Organization Day, and which celebrates the toilet. And I'm assuming maybe the concurrence of the two things is so eventually the men can be taught that there is a device on the toilet that actually goes up and down, is what I'm told. But any event, I couldn't resist that one. And in addition, it is also the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. So, we will the world will little note nor long remember what we say here today, which may or may not be true about today's show, but everyone remembered what Abraham Lincoln said that day in 1863. So a brilliant speech for for a very important battle and for a very important cause, so that government of the people, by the people, shall not perish from the earth. So without further ado, let me bring on Andrew. And Andrew is calling in from Oakland. And he's got a quite diverse background, both in academia, studying in the East Coast and in the West. And he's been writing for Popular Science and a bunch of other magazines. Andrew, you're with us.
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me, Ben.
Thank you for joining us. So let's start with the backstory. How is it? What led you to doing this story?
Well, I was interested in the wake of the Edward Snowden allegations and the concerns that people across the political spectrum have about government listening into their calls. I became interested in so-called crypto phones, which are phones that have more security than a typical iPhone or Android device have on them. And in particular, I spoke with a gentleman from a company that markets a phone called the CryptoPhone 500 that has a piece of software on it called a baseband firewall that basically looks at how your phone is communicating with nearby cellular towers. And what is unique about this CryptoPhone 500 phone, or nearly unique anyhow, at least as of this middle of this year, is that it can tell when there are so-called interceptors or IMSI catchers, which are basically, we call them phony cell towers, but they don't actually look like giant towers. They're more like a computer with a radio on it that can essentially intercept your call or intercept your signals from your phone and either just essentially follow you around and see where you're going, or it can, the more advanced expensive ones can even intercept texts, listen into your calls, or in some cases even send text, essentially take over your phone and do things. So what was unique about this story was that there was a lot of knowledge from civil libertarian groups that the police forces around the country and the federal government, various federal government agencies, had purchased devices like this, but there really wasn't a way for your average person to know when this was happening. And the CryptoPhone 500 is a very expensive phone. It's retails for around $3,500, and it's sold mainly to executives who travel a lot in Asia and are worried about intellectual property theft. But when they, you know, these customers are here in the United States, they started noticing, hey, you know, when I pass a certain military base or when I'm just driving around, suddenly my CryptoPhone pings me and says, hey, you've got suspicious activity on your phone. And so what they did, which was kind of a marketing coup, was to assemble these reports and generate a map of where these things had been spotted. And so suddenly it was no longer a theoretical thing that only the ACLU and the EFF were worried about, but instead it became something like, oh, wow, in my community, this could be happening. Because the numbers are pretty interesting. I believe it's we know of at least 43 police forces in more than 15 states that have purchased these things, and there's 12 different federal agencies that have purchased these things. So they're out there, and realistically, most of us don't really have to worry. But for the ACLU, it's partially the principle of the thing, you know.
Right, and the EFF as well.
Yeah, and for the EFF, foundation. Sure.
Now, just to get some vernacular down, the technology is often referred to as Stingray. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, Stingray is like a brand name, sort of the way some people say Xerox instead of photocopier, or the way people say Kleenex instead of tissue. It's made by a company that's it's still probably the biggest purveyor of these devices, and they have a very... Again, worrisome from a civil liberties point of view, they have a very secretive attitude towards these technologies on the grounds that we can't let police forces tell the people what they're doing with them, because then the criminals will find out and figure out how to defeat the technology.
Right, the circular question you can never answer then.
Right.
So let's back up and start with, so what if someone has these towers, what can they do?
Well, it depends how much money you got, because there are very sort of rudimentary ones. Yeah. Well, if you don't have that much, it's questionable how much you can do unless you're really, really good with computers.
Okay.
Basically, it is possible, and there are some interesting demonstrations on the web that various professors and so-called white hat hackers have done, where they've built their own cell phone interceptor tower, where they take a PC with essentially a radio adaptive device attached to it, and then they use the base station software called OpenBTS, and they're able to get some amount of control over phones in their area. But the real trick there is that there usually is some form of encryption that your calls, for instance, have when you're making a call to another person. So
right. The
hard part is really breaking the encryption. And that's where most of us don't have the skills where we can do this level of hacking. So that's where you get companies like Harris. And there's really a ton of companies, both the United States and India and China, selling these things. And they the really good ones run in the neighborhood of about $100,000.
So the good ones are the towers where you can monitor, or the devices that block them?
To do the monitoring.
Okay.
And again, the really expensive ones also aren't actually towers. I know some people, reading some of the response to the articles, that's one of the things that I people seem to have misunderstood, which is we call them phony cell towers, but they actually look like computers with antennas on it. And
okay.
you can. And the other thing about them is that many of them are portable. You can just drive them around in a truck. So if you're with the DEA, who we do know has purchased these types of devices, you could just have an unmarked truck with an interceptor in it and drive it in the vicinity of a suspect and see if you can get their phone to be fooled into attaching to your computer, thinking that it's actually a real cell phone.
So if I'm law enforcement, I'm using this device.
Uh-huh.
Theoretically, I'm able to monitor someone's cell phone communications because based on that.
Yeah, And there's some that just will monitor where you go. So if your phone connected to the interceptor or the Stingray, and it would just show a map of you wandering around in Santa Monica, and you know you went to get coffee, you went to the mechanics, you went to your office, etc. So that's a simpler form, but there are more advanced ones that allow the law enforcement officer to actually get into your phone.
Now, to operate it, is there a code you put in where you inform the device that you have a warrant to do that search?
No. And in fact, there are that's been a point of contention in prosecutions where the judge will want to know, well, how did you get the evidence about, you know, such and such suspect? And the police, because they've signed non-disclosure agreements with Harris, will say, well, we can't say. We have, you know, we can't say where we got the evidence. And so that doesn't always go over well with judges at all.
No, I can imagine. Yeah, especially.
Yeah, I mean, you're a lawyer. You understand.
Yes. I can hear gavels pounding, if not flying, in response to that. So, I mean, the question I asked was somewhat facetious, obviously, but I mean, only recently there was a Supreme Court decision, you know, about tracking GPS data, and that it required a warrant, and so at the very same time, you have the Supreme Court saying, you know, this type of stuff requires a warrant. It sounds like law enforcement is really arming up on the ability to do it without it.
You're exactly right. And in fact, there's a case in Tallahassee, Florida, where officers admitted using the technology at least 200 times without telling a judge because of that non-disclosure agreement.
I saw the press about that. Basically, so the company has a non-disclosure agreement and is actually urging its subscribers to more or less commit perjury or lie, you know, or lie to some extent to people making legitimate inquiries about, you know, how information was found or about the technology itself.
Yeah, or it's maybe a lies of omission, at least, where they want you to kind of try not to say anything at all.
Right. And so what is driving this secrecy? I mean, obviously, I can understand that this is all some, you know, law enforcement investigatory actions have some element of secret. Technology has some element of secrecy as well.
Yeah.
But what is driving, you know, the kind of hyper-secrecy that seems to be prevalent here?
You know, I think it's a certain amount of paranoia, and there is a, you know, there's a legitimate sense that, well, if the criminals know that we're, you know, able to get, essentially attach ourselves to their phones this easily, then they won't say things on phones, and it'll make it harder to gather intel. But on the other hand, you know, I think the idea that savvy criminals wouldn't know that that their phones are likely to be listened to is
right.
Pretty unlikely at this point. And moreover, I think the real serious objection to this is that it's essentially kind of a dragnet, because even if you just happen to be walking by that drug suspect, your phone can be attached to this rogue cell base station too. And then you get followed around, and, you know, presumably you have nothing to hide, but maybe there's something slightly embarrassing, like you're going to an AA meeting, or you're going to an abortion clinic, stuff that the police have no legitimate right to know about, but
Exactly. Suddenly,
because they've got everybody's data, they know about it.
Now, you know, it's interesting, you use the term, and you know, in this, I've heard several times in the English language, and it's kind of a up there, you know, savvy criminal. I think I'm reminded of the movie Body Heat, which I don't know if you ever saw, but it's a
I saw it years ago. Yeah.
Yes, it was, Lawrence Kasdan's one of his early movies, and it was the breakout for Kathleen Turner. And there's a great scene where William Hurt is getting advice from Mickey Rourke on how to make a bomb. And Mickey Rourke starts repeating William Hurt's advice to him earlier in the film, and says, someone once told me that anytime you go to commit a crime, if you're smart, you'll think of there's 50 mistakes you can make, and if you're smart, you think of 20 of them. And believe me, you're not that smart. You just hear stories of criminals. I mean, people all the time. I mean, you're going to catch people. I mean, people just don't think of those details. And, you just read some of the arrest stories that go on. I mean, granted, there are some very sophisticated organized crime types who, are probably, have color-coded Post-its or something. But, for certain types of law enforcement. But, and then, yes, you will have some difficulty, but you knew that all along. That's why you got the technology. They know you're trying to find it, but it's the idea of a savvy criminal just kind of strikes me as odd, as a justification for why you can't talk about it. And the other thing, it's also, the fact that they're paranoid and they're using this device that's kind of breeding paranoia among the populace, because everyone thinks, oh my God, I'm being listened to.
Right.
And which, it has a very corrosive effect because it encourages really greater distrust in government.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think there is a certain breeding paranoia is a good way of putting it, because there are people who have very paranoid views anyhow, and this is actually, I think there's that joke that even paranoids have enemies, or paranoids are
right, yeah.
And,
there are, There's a great line from Ron Howard's The Paper where Randy Quaid says, "I wouldn't be so paranoid if everyone wasn't out to get me," and this kind of is up that those lines.
Yeah, and again, I'll quote a distinction that Oliver Day, who's a security expert who works for a nonprofit called Securing Change, put it. Mm-hmm. He said, in a society like ours where we face a threat of terrorism and organized crime, and there are bad people doing things secretly that
right.
the police need to be able to find out about, there's a difference between so-called targeted surveillance where you get a warrant, you go to more trouble to limit the amount of surveillance you're doing, and then there's mass surveillance, which is what we have now, where all of our emails and our calls are getting gobbled up by an NSA machine.
Right,
you're out on the street. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, the question, though, is, are we using it? I mean, there are a lot of people who say that we actually had the data that could have alerted us to 9/11, but we're relying on technology and not people, and so we weren't processing it.
Yeah.
And, it's one thing, putting aside the whole, Fourth Amendment constitutional, invasion of privacy aspects of it, there's the actual real, is it worth it? Are we getting anything for it if we have all this data, but we just don't know what to do with it?
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, I think the defense of doing it this way, of gobbling up everybody, is you can start to use these machine learning algorithms that are able to detect patterns by, if you look at, 10 million people and who they're calling, you can start to see patterns that a human being just wouldn't have the ability to see. But in many ways, that's still, because of the Fourth Amendment, it's concerning, because then you're starting to see patterns of people doing, legitimate things in a democratic society that the state suddenly knows about that they don't necessarily have any right to know about. So, for instance, if you're in the NRA, they can start seeing everybody who you're calling.
Right.
Does that have a deterrent to people's, right to organize and, stand up for gun rights, et cetera, or whatever your cause is.
Right. There's another element. These are being sold to governments.
There's what?
These are being sold to governments.
Yes.
You know, being purchased with tax dollars, those type of agreements are often subject to FOIA or, you know, open government laws. And so you're having this whole, you know, web of secrecy through the confidentiality agreements. And then we talked earlier about, you know, possibly suborning perjury. You know, is there any backfire or heat being focused now at the companies purveying this, you know, for, you know, possible wrongdoing?
You mean like a civil suit against Harris or something?
A civil suit or even a criminal investigation, to the extent that they're encouraging people to commit perjury.
You know, I haven't heard of anything like that. You know, it's possible. Although I think that, you know, the ACLU, for instance, they're trying to focus on just sort of getting the word out about these things and, you know, worrying less about Harris than worrying about, you know, the government and what they're doing with it, as far as I understand it.
But if you can't find out, I mean, I think it's kind of a circular thing, because if you can't find out what they're doing because the government won't tell you because of the confidentiality agreement, you know, there you have it. You know, you don't know whether your rights are being violated. You don't know to the extent that you are being monitored if it's for just cause. And
right. Yeah, well, I think at least one form of redress is the courts. I mean, cause
yes,
as you know, judges are very independent-minded, you know, or frequently are very independent-minded, and are do see this problem of having evidence that's getting introduced that it may not be legitimate or may have come without a warrant, or, you know, the police trying to introduce it without saying how they got it. How did you know that suspect A was, you know, at such and such address on the night of, you know, February 15th, et cetera. And there, you know, so there's pushback on that. And then there also the FCC has opened an investigation of the fact that because this is so secretive,
right,
it also creates an opening for criminal organizations or terrorist groups or foreign spy organizations to set up their own interceptors. And it's not incredibly likely, but on the other hand, it's sort of a hidden in plain sight type of tactic, because if you don't know who's running all of these interceptors, then, you know, nobody knows, really.
Right.
So it would be easy to kind of hide, to be another tree in the forest, if you will.
And if you think about it, if, you know, we know for a fact, you know, based on recent investigations, that, you know, that the Chinese government has actually a building or two full of people hacking into U.S. Commercial websites trying to get information. If they can get something for far less, you know, just by, you know, purchasing this rather than, you know, having an army division, why not? And I'm going to ask you to answer that question after we take a short break.
Okay.
You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report only on Webmaster Radio FM.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief session for our sponsors. Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let TopSEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Introducing Rumble, the smart mobile management system, the first end-to-end mobile platform where you can make real-time app modifications from a point-and-click dashboard. Want to change the design of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the ad map of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the content mix of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Power your mobile business with Rumble. Are you ready to rumble? Visit www.rumble.me. Whether you are an online business or domain name investor, you need access to the best names. With over 270 million domains already registered, finding the right names at the best price requires a great wingman. NameJet.com puts you in the pilot seat by giving you fast and unparalleled access to some of the best premium and expired domain names on earth. As the number one domain name auction platform, NameJet.com is the best place to find domains for your business or investment. So light the afterburners to the domain name aftermarket and fly over to NameJet.com at Mach speed to get great domains today. NameJet.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
About this controversial technology that allows people to monitor and intercept cell phone communications, and it's caused quite a stir. The Stingray technology, as it's often referred to. And we have with us Andrew Rosenblum, who's a writer with Popular Science, a number of other organizations. And he's also a former professor at UCLA. And I know we had a question before the break, but let's go to an easier question. Andrew, who's going to win on Saturday?
Oh, you mean UCLA, USC?
Yes.
You know, I'm a UCLA partisan, but if I were betting my money on it, I'd say USC.
Wow, I set up a softball so you can say UCLA and you answer USC.
No sentimentality mentality in sports.
Wow, that's harsh. I'm rooting for UCLA, but thank you anyway. So let's go back to the question at hand. We're talking about, you know, obviously with all the money that's been being invested in cyber espionage by overseas parties, you know, if you can get these devices relatively cheaply in the United States, why not just do it here?
Yeah, well, and that's certainly a concern. And again, speaking with some of these security experts, you know, with really secure, sensitive material, if you're working on a, you know, piece of technology that you have if you're designing it, say, and you have a strong sense that the Chinese government or someone else might try to steal it, you actually have people working on so-called air gap computers where they're not actually connected to the internet, which seems strange in this day and age. But you know, if there's no way in, I mean, if there's no way out, then there's no way in either. So, you know, that's kind of the world we're living in. I mean, the interceptor issue is a little different in the sense that you can only get onto their phones using these things, as far as I understand it, because it's essentially, it tricks, it does what's called, in the parlance, a handshake with your phone, and it says, hello, phone, you know, let's say you have an iPhone 5, it says, hello, iPhone 5, I'm a cell tower, I see that you're capable of 3G and 4G, but I'm an old cell tower, and I'm only capable of 2G, so can you talk to me in 2G, and then the phone says, okay. And that's important because 2G is actually a lot easier to crack as an encryption, as a form of encryption than those newer forms. And in fact, so the ISPs are phasing 2G out over the next couple of years. But in rural areas and areas that don't have great service anyhow, 2G is pervasive. And so our phones are trying to be useful by, you know, being able to function in all of these different protocols, but that also is a security hole that these interceptors are able to exploit.
So if you're, I mean, I guess if I'm a judge, if I'm a defense lawyer, if I'm a city council member, or a state, you know, legislator, or even a member of the FCC, I guess I have a lot of questions to ask about these things. You know, I want to know, you know, what you're paying for this. You know, Mr. Chief of Police, or you know, whoever is the person who's buying it. I want to know how often you're using it and what procedures you have in place to make sure it's not abused. And are any of these questions really being answered?
Well, it's sort of, there's a lot of push and pull through Freedom of Information Acts, and you know, judges haranguing departments and departments pushing back and saying, you know, we can't compromise our technologies. If you're, for you and your listeners who want to know more about how these things look like, our competitor, Ars Technica, is a technical website. It's called ARSTECHINTA. They did a great story. It's about, you know, sort of a roundup of what these various IMSI catchers is another term, look like. And it gives you a sense of, I think they have at least some rough price ranges, too. And it'll give your listeners a sense of what they look like. What's really interesting is some of them are as small as a walkie-talkie. So you could be an officer on foot walking through an apartment building and just, you know, seeing whose phone you can get to attach to it.
It's interesting. So when you say you view Ars Technica as your competitor, is that for Popular Science?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, from an internet, you know, Ars is a great publication, obviously, you know, on the internet.
Yeah, they do great work.
Issues. And, you know, I monitor their stuff regularly. And so, yeah, they're a great resource. But, you know, but this, you know, obviously your story is quite groundbreaking. And so I guess you... Where do you think we should be, is like 3 months from now, 6 months from now on this issue?
Well, you know, my sense is that, I mean, you know, predicting the future is always a great way to look foolish, but...
Oh, no, not just predicting, but what do you think we should, you know, if we're just discovering the issue now.
Right.
You know, what do you think we should be doing? And then I guess you can venture a guess of what you think we will. I mean, I think your nurture usually is the answer, so we'll probably be here talking about World Toilet Day again. And you know, what do you think we should be at in a couple of months on this?
You know, it's a tough one because it's really hard to use these things in a way that's targeted, where you're just targeting one number.
Yeah.
Because you don't even need to know the number of in order to get them to work. You don't need to know the number of the phone. You just sort of, you know, you wait for the phone to come to you, and then you figure out who it is. So, I mean, maybe if there were a way to just target it by the so-called IMEI number, the identification number of the phone, I think that's the real objection, is that it's not targeted in any way. It's a mass surveillance or a dragnet form of surveillance. So that, I would like to at least see some sort of effort to do that, but it may not be possible. I mean, the way these things work is kind of as a dragnet that grabs everything nearby and then figures out what's usable. So it's a tough one. I think what's more likely is people who are really concerned about their privacy are more likely to do stuff like buy crypto phones, not talk on the phone as freely, and your average person just who doesn't really care about privacy will just say, well, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong and I won't, you know, worry about it. But, you know, that's kind of the status quo.
So, would you buy a crypto phone?
Well, you know,
I guess you could, and expensive for your work, but, you know,
yeah.
Do you recommend it?
You know, they're pretty neat. If you can expense it and you have a company that, or, you know, the type of income that allows you to spend on it, they're pretty cool. And I, you know, as a tech writer, I like cool technologies. Mm-hmm. I am working on a story for now about how you can add this capability to a normal Android phone without having to buy a really expensive, you know, so-called hardened device that's basically designed to be super secure. But I'm not sure how well that's going to work. So that's what I'm trying to investigate now. But I think it's neat. You know, even if we could have a way where when you're being your phone is being attacked by an IMSI catcher or an interceptor, that it would at least tell you, so you at least know, oh, the cops are listening in or the cops mm-hmm. are tracking your phone. That would seem to me at least more legitimate or more fair than just, you know, getting everybody in the neighborhood.
Right.
But I think, you know, that's probably not too likely.
So tell us about your background.
My background? Well, I'm a tech writer. I actually got into journalism sort of in mid-career change. I was working on being a professor down at UCLA of American Literature, and then I just found that I was enjoying doing the freelance writing I was doing more than the academic route. So I switched off about it's probably been about 7 years ago.
You studied antebellum. Postbellum. Was it anti or postbellum? New England literature.
Yeah. Uh huh.
And what about antebellum New England literature? What interested you?
Well, at least related to what we're talking about, it's an interesting expression of individual rights and thinking about what is it to be human and what is it to be alive and what is it to live a meaningful life, all those types of questions. The New Englanders in particular were very, were very big on that. So
and still are, may I say.
What's that?
And still are, may I say.
And still are, yeah.
As a New Englander. But, I'm from Rhode Island originally.
Oh,
but,
yeah, okay.
Yes. So, you left academia, and now you've been a fairly successful journalist in working with Science and, UCLA Magazine, and what are some of the other publications?
And what? And a bunch of other publications.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a kind of crazy ride in the sense that media life is, it's kind of uncertain, as I'm sure you know from your own work.
Indeed, yes. So what's next for you on this front? Or is there another technology thing that we should be looking for?
Well, I'm hoping that this idea of how to build your own device will gain traction. And so that's the next thing I think that people should look for.
Now, next week we have we broadcast on Wednesdays every week, and so the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, we traditionally have a Thanksgiving Day episode where we talk about what aspects of the web we're thankful for, and so kind of as a preview for next week's show, what would you say you're thankful for?
I'd say, I've been lucky to have been, blessed with a great family and safety. I'm really, you see all the violence in the world. Frankly, I live in Oakland, so violence
right,
in Oakland.
Yeah, that's
I'm,
very real.
I feel lucky to, have been not injured or hurt. And I have fun work and fun colleagues, so grateful for all those things.
Anything on the web in particular that you're thankful for?
Any what?
Anything on the web, like a website or apps or software.
I guess in general, I'd say it's amazing how much really high quality stuff is available to consumers. When you just think about laptops and cell phones, as mm-hmm. they're no longer luxury items. They're pretty widely available. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, just the amount of technology that we have at our hands, just even thinking back to, I've been practicing law for 25 years, and when we started, we had those clunky old Wang computers, and, it's just amazing to think, what we have now and how much power is available just in a single cell phone. And
yeah.
So if people want to learn more about what you're up to and where to follow your next story, where should they go?
They can hit me up on AndrewRosenblum.com or on Twitter.
I'm sorry, you broke up. On Twitter where?
At AndrewRosenblum.com or on Twitter at RosenblumAndrew.
Great. And I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure. This is just a fascinating topic. And
thank you, Ben.
It is very troubling. I think what the FCC is trying to do probably makes sense because we do have to get our arms around it. That's the challenge we have. But I also hope that you'll be rooting for the Bruins on Saturday.
Yeah, well, of course I will. I'm just, trying not to be disappointed,
All right, well, I'll give you another softball. So Gettysburg, north, south.
I'm a northerner partisan,
There you go. Okay, well, we see end on that note. Thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate it. And we're definitely going to be watching what you write on this in the future because It's a critical issue. I mean, the fact that whatever privacy protection we have, it can just be ignored by a non-disclosure agreement. So thanks again. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Bennett. See you later.
Thank you. Okay. So we do have some news updates to report, and one of them is actually quite surprising. In the internet space, one of the only major good housekeeping seal of approval that exists really is we're going to talk about in a second after these messages. You're listening to CyberLaw and Business Report only on webmasterradio.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the CyberLaw and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
When you started your business, you first listened to your professors. Now that your business is growing and gaining ground, you only seek out professionals. PPC Professionals, an industry leader for highly optimized search marketing campaigns with over 30 years of combined management experience. Our professional approach to every campaign helps you find every avenue of revenue so that you can not only stay ahead of your competitors, but get a return on your investment and increase your bottom line. PPC Professionals, personal, professional, PPC services. PPCprofessionals.com.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Johnson, what's this mantis I keep hearing about? Do we need to call an exterminator?
No, sir. Moby Mantis is our new SMS marketing tool.
SM what?
SMS, text messaging. Moby Mantis lets us communicate directly with our customers in real time. We can send promos, coupons. It even lets our customers market for us by sharing offers with their friends online. It's been great for business.
Sounds expensive.
Actually, I sign us up for an extended free trial. It hasn't cost us a dime.
Good work, Johnson. I guess the only thing we'll be exterminating is the competition.
To get your free extended trial of Moby Mantis, text radio to 21691. That's radio to 21691 for Moby Mantis.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on webmasterradio.fm.
We're back. This is Bennett Kelly, and definitely an interesting segment on the cell towers. I know a lot of people are troubled by it, and I'm particularly troubled by the confidentiality provision that actually a company is instructing law enforcement not to be truthful with city council members or the courts or whatever. That's a very troubling development. But and there's an odd development or a surprising development today I came across is the Federal Trade Commission has actually fined Trustee. Trustee has for years, for over a decade now, been the prime privacy seal and has a whole host of seals that it offers to companies on the internet. And they are basically the closest that there is out there to a good housekeeping seal approval on the internet. And apparently, they were issuing trustee seals for privacy compliance without auditing to ensure that it was the companies they were certifying actually complied with their guidelines. And the FTC said that that was deceptive, and trustee has actually paid a $200,000 fine to the FTC for this violation. Definitely an embarrassing event for a brilliant organization. They've done great work. They've been on our show. So we're really sad to see this happen. I'm sure they have some excellent leadership. Fran Mayer, Chris Kelly is on their board. And so I'm sure we'll see this addressed quickly and appropriately. So, but definitely a shock to see this in the news. But one other thing that's interesting out there is that I saw a headline, speaking of Ars Technica, there's a headline in Ars Technica about Uber suggesting that they engage in, quote, opposition research on journalists. So apparently Uber is getting, you know, fed up about some of the negative stories that have been written about it. And so they're more or less suggesting that they go and do dig up dirt, personal dirt, on the reporters that cover them. If you can think of anything more slimy, I'll give me a minute. But that is just really not something that a company of Uber's brand wants to be peddling. I mean, this is a town car company trying to peddle garbage. And frankly, they should be ashamed. I think whoever issued that should be fired. And I really think they got to think about their approach. If the reason they're getting bad press is because they're probably doing some stupid things. And so then the way to get around that isn't to smear journalists. The way to get around that is to actually deliver value to consumers, to not break someone's nose like that happened that one case, and to actually, you know, care about the safety of the consumers, as some of the reports have revealed. So Uber, big misfire. Get it right next time. So we only have a few minutes, but I want to say a congratulations to two big conclaves of internet lawyers this week. And one of them is in New Delhi, and it's the International Cyber Law, Cyber Crime, and Cybersecurity Conference being held in New Delhi, and with Pavan Dugal leading that effort. And he was kind enough to invite me to attend, but I just was not able to make it. I had a conflict, but I was pleased to be among the people contributing to it. And I wish him much success as he starts that tomorrow. In addition, I will be joining my fellow compatriots at the Internet Law Leadership Summit in Las Vegas starting tomorrow. And it's a biannual gathering of about 30 to 40 of the top internet lawyers in the U.S. And it's good fun. But we actually learn a lot and talk a lot about what is getting our arms around the latest developments in internet law today. And this every year, every 6 months, the developments just keep coming. So, but one way to stay on top of those developments is to listen to Cyber Law and Business Report right here on Webmaster Radio. And I want to thank you for joining us for this edition on this special Gettysburg Day. And all the best to you. Drive safe. And we will be back here next week with another special Thanksgiving edition. What are you grateful for on the internet? Next Wednesday here on Cyber Law and Business Report. Courts adjourned. See you then.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited. Looking for a